America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome along to the conversation. It's a little bit more than a minute past the hour here, a minute past 6 p.m. In the Eastern Daylight Time Zone on this Halloween 2013, or as I like to think of it, Samhain. Traditionally, I guess Samhain starts at sundown on October the 31st and goes to sundown on November the 1st. I was doing a little Wikipedia researching, and it referenced the historic, maybe prehistoric, that even is a freighted phrase, origins of the holiday, marking the time when the flocks and the herds would be driven down from the higher pastures where they had grazed for the summer. And the beginning of the season of slaughter would begin. In other words, good eats. And the typical human revelry that goes around having food to eat for a while. I guess we're technically about midway between the first day of autumn and the first day of winter. And I can't help thinking about, we're talking about Irish people and Scots people and Celtic people largely. And maybe there's a little bit of a cultural tie. Maybe there's some sort of Jungian ancient memory at work there to remember a shortening day. And people in rough woolen kilts, my ancients, driving the herds down, if in fact we hadn't stolen them. I mean, that possibility always exists. And yeah, Samhain, Halloween. Along about this time, not too awfully far from here, my eldest daughter and my youngest daughter are taking my three grandchildren out for trick-or-treating. The youngest is Superman. The middle one, the redoubtable Jasper, is a Ninja Turtle. And the oldest, Loni, well, she didn't want to be Batgirl. She was very clear about it. She wanted to be a Batman princess. So she's got a little black leotard with the yellow and black Batman symbol on it, and a yellow tutu, and a Batman mask. I mean, what do you tell a 6-year-old when she says, "Mommy, I want to be a Batman princess"? You mean Batgirl? No, Batman princess. I think there's also a tiara involved. Texas Betsy noting, I had a cowgirl princess in my room this afternoon. Anybody, yeah, I guess anything can be turned into a princess. See, just as I said, Texas Betsy noting, with a tiara on the cowboy hat. Precisely. Makes sense. So I'm awfully proud of our eldest for the creativity she showed in pulling those costumes together. Wikipedia also noting that perhaps the costumes are thought to have originated in a desire to mask, to disguise oneself so as not perhaps to be recognized by the evil spirits. There are other similar traditions in other cultures, you know, that we won't, yeah, but that sort of connection to the world of the seen and the unseen as it was understood, well, this is the night for that. Agnes is all dressed up as the Red Scare. She's not dressed up at all. It's a joke. I told her, she was a superhero by the name of Red Scare, a red-headed 40-something superhero dressed all in black, whose superpower is the ability to bless one out sufficiently to make one want to crawl in a hole and die. She laughed until she punched me in the shoulder. Me, I got no superpowers and no costume. Or maybe it's forever a costume. Who knows? But happy Halloween, everybody. Happy Samhain. If you've got little ones out there trick-or-treating, I hope they didn't get the letter. Because, you know, these things go viral in a hurry, and there's always somebody out there wanting to... yuck. Out in North Dakota, apparently, and you've probably already heard about this, there's one woman who is passing judgment on little children. Anybody want to guess which way this woman votes? She's passing judgment on little children whom she deems to be moderately obese. I guess the gravidly, morbidly obese ones, she's just going to dump the candy in their bag and let them move on because maybe they're past helping or something. But no, welcome to 2013 with fat shaming on Halloween. Instead of giving the children that she deems to be too obese for her liking maybe a nutritious snack, she's giving them a letter to be read to them by their parents. Here's the letter. Happy Halloween and happy holidays, neighbor. You're probably wondering why your child has this note. Have you ever heard the saying, it takes a village to raise a child? I am disappointed in the village of Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo. Your child is, in my opinion, moderately obese and should not be consuming sugar and treats to the extent of some children this Halloween season. My hope is that you will step up as a parent and ration candy this Halloween and not allow your child to continue these unhealthy eating habits. Thank you. Notice this concerned citizen. Well, we know who she is now, but the concerned citizen did not sign her name to her little piece of fat-shaming correspondence for the Halloween trick-or-treat bag. Jesus! I just want to send a message to the parents of kids that are really overweight. I think it's just... So it's really overweight, not moderately obese. She can't make her mind up. I think it's just really irresponsible of parents to send them out looking for free candy just because all the other kids are doing it. Maybe for Christmas she plans on being Santa Claus and passing out, I don't know, a month's membership, free membership to Jenny Craig. Here, kid, happy Halloween, have an eating disorder. Now, you know what? If it was a letter that said, and maybe this makes us bad Halloween people, but there was a time when we gave out the little mini boxes of raisins. Because it's a natural food, it's sweet, it's yummy. It's not full of high fructose corn syrup or yellow number 612,514. Yeah, we've kind of felt good about the raisins, actually. I love raisins. Oddly enough, our youngest despises them. It doesn't matter what I've cooked or her mother has cooked. Doodle will look at us and has it got raisins in it? No, Doodle. Ha-ha, fooled you. You just ate a raisin. We've given out raisins. In the little boxes. Or, even if... I wouldn't be concerned with a note that says, Here in this household, we have a real concern with additives and refined sugars and blah, 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 blah. Please note that the candy we're giving away, or maybe you post it outside the doorway, the candy we're giving away this year is organic. Pesticide-free. Does not contain high fructose corn syrup or maltodextrin, made from corn that's got the gene of a snail's scrotum spliced into it. Courtesy of Monsanto. I'm okay with that. But really, fat shaming? I am the Lord High Priestess of moderate obesity, you terrible parent. Go home and stick your finger down your child's throat. Some people. Oh, not really in a laughing matter. Texas Betsy noted, Lucas's worst Halloween was in New York when he got organic, naturally sweetened candy with strawberry as the sweetener. That was the night we confirmed he is seriously allergic to strawberry. But that doesn't mean... I mean, there's a big difference between giving out organic candy at Halloween and trying to palm off vegan tamales at Christmas in Texas. I mean, really? That's an inside joke for Texas Betsy. There are some things up with which no one will put. Yeah, I got an LOL out of that. So it's Halloween, and oddly enough, I don't remember this much controversy on Halloween before. I mean, sure, usually you've got your the typical right-wing evangelical fundamentalists who say, "We, in the name of Jesus, we do not celebrate Halloween. We celebrate a fall festival." Because, after all, Halloween is demonic. No, really. Not kidding. They can't stand the late December thing being referred to as anything but Christmas. But they will, by God, refer to Halloween as, you know, the fall festival. Praise Jesus. But there have been a number of posts in the last couple of days. And like I said, as far as our grandkids are concerned, my son is a green-faced, toboggan-wearing hummingbird this evening. Margie is a mermaid. They got something for the teenage types downtown. Go figure. Ferg looks kind of like the Hulk, only without the anabolic steroid problem. Yeah, but I'm grateful the things that for the restraint shown, especially by our eldest in costuming our grandkids, Superman, Ninja Turtle, Batman, Princess, because I just happened to run across a handful of photographs of things that really people really have dressed their children as. How about a giant, oversized Trojan lubricated condom package for your kid, or dressing your kid up as a bag lady? Oh, or Hitler? Yeah, really, Hitler, or my personal? Oh my God. The Bethany Hamilton, the surfer who lost an arm to a shark. Well, I got a picture here of a little girl with a surf outfit on, surfing on a little surfboard, and an empty sleeve sticking out of it, and her baby brother dressed as a shark. Really. Little tiny, not quite able to walk, pole dancing, hot pink wearing, right. I mentioned Hitler, didn't I? Or a little baby done up as the as the person from the first Alien movie with the alien coming out of its abdomen. Ah, look, there's a little Hannibal Lecter. Some might say creative. You know, really, Hitler is where I draw the line. Okay, the little Mr. T is kind of cute. I got to give you that. And at least an award for creativity to the parent who dressed their kid up as Wilson the Volleyball from the movie Castaway. Wilson! Yeah. But I had a note. I had a note from Dr. John shortly before airtime, and he directed my attention to something I had seen earlier in the day over at Alternet. April DaCosta writing an article called "The Six Most Wildly Offensive Halloween Costumes." The subhead: "Sexy Squaw, Anorexia, Seriously," and talking about the various. Really, sexy bin Laden? For women. The word sexy denotes that it is a costume for women. And having great sport with the people that April DaCosta deems to be just a bunch of common rubes who are silly and, you know, racist, whatever, enough, insensitive enough to wear such things. Then there, of course, there was the Halloween party at what was the name of the hospital? The Halloween party. And News Ninja Gene sent this to my Facebook page. The Halloween party at a medical center in Kentucky. Stewart Medical Center had an employee Halloween party, complete with a costume contest, that kind of thing. So one person showed up in a straitjacket with a Barack Obama mask on, and a couple of folks dressed up as, I guess, orderlies. And the photograph started making the rounds because the person in the Obama straitjacket costume won third place. At which point the hospital said, Jenny Stewart Medical Center's vice president immediately sent an apology to the staff, took responsibility for the incident, set a rule saying that henceforth people would not wear costumes with political, racial, or gender-based themes, and went so far as to mandate sensitivity training for all 750 of the people who work there, which is probably not a bad idea. Meanwhile, in the sort of follow-up to the body of the article, this paragraph. Walmart has pulled a costume of a beard and turban that looks like Osama bin Laden, and has also stopped selling a naughty leopard costume for toddlers after complaints that the outfit sexualized children. Meanwhile, a Marvel Spider-Girl costume comes with a pink skirt and go-go boots. Mm-hmm. Which takes me, the alternate story and this story, takes me to the observations Dr. John has passed along. Because I think they are, well, they're par for the course for Dr. John, but led me in a completely different direction or a completely different understanding of all of this. Dr. John said, here's my feeling. It's one thing to dismiss people, and that's what the Alternet article does, to dismiss people who would buy such costumes as the crew of mouth-breathing asshats that they no doubt are. And that's the tack the article takes. Dr. John continues, however, but you know how I feel about consumption. We put way too much emphasis on that side of the equation while basically ignoring production. For instance, we construct class as something that you can buy your way into. Ask almost anyone, and they'll tell you, there's no class in America. Right? I think I even referenced that silly notion in our conversation with Steve from the UK last night. There's no class in America. Anyone can afford a big screen TV. Anybody can afford a new truck every 5 years. Everybody's middle class, and some of us will pull ourselves up by our bootstraps into the upper class. And the next thing you know, we've got a 200-foot yacht flying a Cayman Islands flag and a full-time crew of 12, and life is good. But Dr. John observes, in fact, class is a measure of where you are situated in the production of goods and services and information. Let me read that again. In fact, class is a measure of where you are situated in the production of goods and services and information. If you punch a clock, or have a supervisor, or work a machine, including a computer, you're in the working class. If you supervise others, or provide unique technical knowledge, or teach, you're in the middle class. If your name's on the building, or you sign others' paychecks, or your money buys the machines, then you're in the upper class, or the bourgeois class. What's this got to do with racist Halloween costumes? Production happens before consumption. And this is the kind of deep background thinking that I love. These costumes are made before they're bought. Now, a statement like that seems to speak for itself. You can't buy something that but no one's out there subscribing to the sexy Osama bin Laden costume long before the factory in China ever produces it. Thus, what seems to be an obvious statement becomes one that is far more nuanced than we may have suspected. These costumes are made before they're bought. Production decisions are made by the upper class. You could call them the one percenters. They make decisions on what to produce in order to satisfy desire that they predict will exist in consumption. You know, focus groups. Or they might even actively work to create such desire. Witness whatever turns out to be the it toy for the coming Christmas season that is already being hawked on shelves. Had to go buy some candy for this evening to give away. I'm a little late to the party on that. And I walked in and found out it's Halloween and all the Halloween candy crap was gone. It was all Christmas stuff. Oh, little kids will be getting some Christmas raisins in their treat. No. Why would a one percenter want to make racist Halloween costumes? The short answer, as noted by Dr. John, is because they know they'll sell. Why will they sell or be consumed? Because the proles have been fed tons of lies that create racism, sexism, and homophobia. They've been fed this by the media, which are also controlled by one percenters. Working class and middle class people are taught to dislike people who are different in what are really arbitrary ways at the end of the day, in order to stop them from ever uniting together and tossing the one percenters out onto the street. As another example, witness our discussion in the last few days of the rise of professional athletics in the last part of the 19th century, concurrent with the rise of organized labor.
Come on. Hey, Huey. Let's not go to the Union Hall meeting. Let's go watch the ball team play. I hear they got a hot new pitcher. Kid named Ruth. Although that's the wrong accent. So I honestly, Dr. John says, don't have a lot of blame for people who buy these costumes. Or rather, I have a hell of a lot more blame for the system that creates and then satisfies a desire for the costumes. Capitalism scares me more than any sort of undead. Let's close with a quote appropriate for the day. If money comes into the world with a congenital bloodstain on one cheek, capital comes dripping from head to foot, from every pore, with blood and dirt. Karl Marx, Das Kapital, Volume 1. What an awesome way to look at this, the manipulative side of Halloween. This from Jim. Subject line, costume. I am wearing a French maid's costume with a tiara. Nothing like a tiara when cleaning the toilet. Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween to you too, Jim. And happy scrubbing bubbles. Oh, I did say that, didn't I, Dr. John? In describing the costume of the superhero Red Scare, I said, Agnes is not dressed at all. Subject line from Dr. John, quote, she's not dressed at all, unquote. Well, wait, so it's that kind of Halloween at the Kincaid Manse. Why are you on the air? See, if this was all scripted, it would be no fun. Sergi, with a note, subject line, the fat-shaming letter. That woman better hope that none of the kids she hands that letter to has a big sibling that's a homie, because if so, she better get the pooper scooper ready, because there's going to be a lot of poop appearing on her property soon, both of the dog and the human variety, and perhaps some inflaming garbage bags. Stomp it out! Furthermore, she really should hope that no big sibling homies of the mischievous variety get involved in the mix, because she may end up having to have her vehicle repainted or worse. Sergi, uh-oh, better call Mako, Kyle. We may have to append to Sergi the honorific homie correspondent. We've been getting some little lessons in the world of homie from Sergi lately, and I think it may be more than appropriate. And a happy Halloween to you all from Tim from L.A. A photograph of a march of zombies with Jesus in the midst, marching right along. Yeah, it's Halloween. Tricks and treats and, well, sometimes just another day. The dateline for this story is, in fact, today. In Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It is the story of an unnamed 14-year-old. Talk about your tricks. An unnamed 14-year-old high school student in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in which said 14-year-old at Westdale Middle School, and this is said to have happened back on October 4th, but it's just now getting the light of day, set his teacher on fire. No, set his teacher on fire. Now, it's not like this was ninth grade introductory physical science and something went sideways with the Bunsen burner and the alcohol. No. He set his teacher on fire because his teacher was wearing that headgear called the hijab, traditionally worn by Muslim women. She was substitute teaching that day, and our 14-year-old potential alleged delinquent was acting up, and the teacher reprimanded him. At which point in time, the 14-year-old walked to the front of the class, pulled a cigarette lighter from his pocket, and set fire to her hijab. The happy part of this story is that the teacher was not harmed. This all became very hush-hush. No one was told that this had happened. Kid was taken to a juvenile detention center. And East Baton Rouge Parish Superintendent Bernard Taylor has said, and this is a quote, "It's unfortunate that one student of the almost 1,200 at Westdale made a bad, bad choice and faces some pretty serious consequences. But it doesn't change the fact that Westdale is a fine school." He made a bad, bad choice. Is that newspeak? He made a bad choice. This almost sounds like something out of Raising Arizona. "Now, hi, have you given up your criminal ways of lighting hijabs on fire?" "Yes, ma'am, I have." "Well, remember, Westdale is a fine school. It's just there's a few bad apples out there that like to commit attempted murder by arson when the teacher tells them to just sit down." Good God. Yeah, see, Irish Dave, I'm right there with you. Email from Irish Dave, obviously. So what were the good choices? Because after all, this young man made some bad, bad choices. Halloween. The story, if you want to follow up on it, there's no picture of the woman or the kid or anything like that. Just a picture of the fine, fine Westdale Middle School of Baton Rouge, Louisiana stand. It's over at opposingviews.com. Middle school student in Baton Rouge burns teacher's Muslim head covering. It's also on my page, my Facebook page, Bob Kincaid, that it was put there by News Ninja Gene. "Stay classy," Gene says. Yeah, you bet. Yeah, kind of a busy day. Meanwhile, also from the fields of education, let's see, Temecula, is that California? Yeah. Riverside County. And even though it's Halloween, it's not April Fool's, and I can't make this up. a case generated by Riverside County Sheriff's Deputy Daniel Zipperstein. No, I'm sure he was never bullied in school. No, no, not possible. 17-year-old student there at Chaparral High School in Temecula. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. In a drug sting. The 17-year-old, by the way, is autistic. Two dozen students were taken down in the big sting that was made possible by Riverside County Sheriff's Deputy Daniel Zipperstein, who spent 3 weeks sending 60 text messages to a 17-year-old autistic child. To get him to buy a half of a doobie. The parents were then arrested themselves. After the autistic child had made two purchases of cannabis, the person he thought was his friend cut off all connection to him with no explanation. Jesus. Twenty-one other students were arrested, and apparently Daniel Zipperstein had decided to target the school's special needs students. The Department of Justice has studied the practice of using undercover phony teenagers in high schools. And they found that, yeah, usually they do target the cops, too. The undercover cop targets special needs kids, and that such these processes are absolutely useless for reducing drug use at school, or even the amount of drugs in schools. The Temecula Valley Unified School District has been the Director of Child Welfare and Attendance, Michael Hubbard, and Director of Special Education, Kimberly Velez, have all been sued for negligence, intentional infliction of emotional distress, among other civil claims. And I made a mistake there. Bad headline writing. I'm going to blame them. Sure. Parents, here's the headline. It's over at Raw Story. Travis Geddes is the author of the story, probably not the author of the headline. Parents of autistic teen arrested in undercover drug sting sue school district. Parents of autistic teen arrested in undercover drug sting. But anyway, no, the parents weren't arrested. You can find it over at Raw Story. It just keeps getting better. Robert in Australia with a note. Hello, what? Hi, Bob. We're all aware of the American holiday of Halloween here in Australia only because of films and television. There were attempts to introduce it here, but it never caught on. In the last 10 years, I've seen maybe two groups of under-10s being walked around by parents. The big stores have compensated by putting up their Christmas decorations in late October. So last night, it was very quiet here. And that's the downside of Halloween. Later this evening, it remains to be seen how quiet it will be here. Because after the precious part, the little children in their little costumes that aren't Hitler, and aren't a bag lady, and aren't a condom, the little children in their precious costumes, having been taken around, will be home gorging themselves and making them sick on sweets. At least around here, they won't have letters in their bag telling them that they have been judged insufficiently svelte. And, you know, why don't you get what you need, kids, a good eating disorder. And then the older children will take over with the tricks part. Yeah, you can, in some parts of West Virginia, for instance, kids will take up positions on hills that overlook highways. And as cars pass by, they will throw great handfuls of feed corn at them. Which, when you work out the physics of a piece of feed corn striking a car doing 40 or 50 miles an hour, yeah, it can screw a car up. It can also make people crash their automobiles and burn and die in fiery crashes. Trick! There's always the ubiquitous toilet papering of the trees or the porch or whatever. The egging of the house. Or in the case of what has happened here, and it wasn't on Halloween, the billiard balling of the house. Nothing like an Obama yard sign or the absence of a Friends of Coal sign to really bring on that little act of playful retribution. Yeah. You're absolutely right, Irish Dave. Another really bad, bad choice, going back to our story out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Another really bad, bad choice is getting your Klingenschmitt caught in your Zipperstein. You know, that's got to hurt. Speaking about drug buys, Tim from L.A. Notes, I was speaking to a friend from the LAPD and a drug buy cop came by and chatted with us. I asked after marijuana became legal for medicinal use if drug arrest rose, and the officer said no. As a matter of fact, it dropped drastically, according to the LAPD. Cannabis arrests in high schools dropped 50% as weed is now considered medicine for old people with pain. Imagine if all drugs were decriminalized. Officer Zipperstein would not arrest disabled students for buying dope. Following up on what happens when you get your Klingenschmitt caught in your Zipperstein, Irish Dave noting, of course, to do that, you have to have your pants on bass-ackwards. Dave will be here the rest of the week. Try the veal. Kevin in Colorado Springs noting, bad choices. Bob, more than likely that student's bad choice was instilled in him by his parents and his southern surroundings of bigotry, contempt, and disdain for anyone not like they're supposed to be. Hope the teacher sues his parents and the school district for millions. Money is the only thing that will get these bigoted people's attention. But what you have to worry about, Kevin, is the fact that these are all insured, so nobody's going to get personally touched if he sues the school district or the school, or she, rather. And I imagine that the boy who made the bad, bad choices, well, him and his mama and daddy probably don't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out in. But remember, it's a fine, fine school. It is Halloween, and got a couple of blinking lights here. 304-658-3333. Let's go to the phones. By the way, if you want to jump in on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is the handle. And it's very easy to do. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Edward.
Well, hello, Edward.
Yeah, I had a sort of a Halloween story to tell you. It's not a spook story, but it was rather unusual, I thought. We bought our house in 1978. It was built in 1925. And shortly after we moved in, I had a dream. I was walking down the central hallway, and I walked into the living room, and all of a sudden the door in the foyer burst open, and there were all these young people just laughing and talking and having the best time. And one of the women was dressed in white with a white hat and a white veil. And they all went into the dining room, and you could hear the laughter and the talking and the tinkling of glass and everything. And then I just drifted off into the arms of Morpheus and didn't think much about it. And 1992, the doorbell rings. I go to the door, and there's this nice-looking man standing there, and he says, "Sir, you're going to think I'm crazy." I said, "Oh?" And he says, "I have my mother-in-law and father-in-law in the car, and they're dying to get into your house." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "They were married in your house 50 years ago today.
My goodness.
Their 50th wedding anniversary." So I invited them in. We had a lovely chat and everything, took pictures of them standing in front of the fireplace on the same spot that they had stood 50 years before. And I it was just a delightful thing, I thought. And the gentleman said, well, they didn't have a very long honeymoon because he was already in the service. He was in the Army Air Corps, if anybody remembers what that was.
Precursor to the Air Force.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was a rather unusual experience. And for you and your family and all the Horn family, I have a Scottish spell to protect you from evil.
Oh, do you?
Yes, from ghosties and ghoulies and long-legged beasties and things that go bump in the night. Dear Lord, protect us. Amen.
Amen.
Happy All Hallows Eve, y'all.
Happy Samhain, Edward.
Take care.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Edward calling from Dallas. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, Jim.
You know, that was a delightful story by Edward, because I lived in this old, old condominium while I was living in Columbia, and it was used by the armed forces at Fort Jackson during the war. And I actually had a couple that came by because they had lived in the same place that I lived in during the war or thereabouts, and they just wanted to come in and take a look at it. And they had just been married, and of course her husband was going off to war, and luckily came back. And I thought it was pretty interesting to have thought, you know, how many lives have been lived in this particular domicile that I occupy.
We lived in a house like that in the wilds of a different part of West Virginia that had seen multiple generations. And Agnes was pretty confident in saying that things were not always as they should be. And weird things happened there, Jim.
Well, you know,
very weird things.
There's a lot of, I would say, energy left behind by people who live there, and each one, of course, leaves some type of imprimatur upon the dwelling, particularly in old places. And this place was old. It was built in 1919. And it was upstairs, downstairs type thing. And it was really quite a place. Had some real wild Halloween parties there.
Oh, yeah?
And in my days, you know...
Anything involving aquarium pumps or stirrups or...
No, well, yeah, but... We didn't bring out the machinery. It was, excuse me.
Much more al fresco?
There were enough people who had roll doobies there to make up for any type of, you know, mechanical things. There.
And luckily, no Zippersteins to ruin the frivolity.
No, that year I was 81. This lady I knew, who was just a marvelous sewing machine, had made a toga and a delmonico. And of course, the toga was lined, it was bordered with red. And I had on a red T-shirt, and that type of thing. It was sort of like borrowed from, you know, Liz Taylor's movie Cleopatra, and. I'll tell you, it was a good costume. It really was. I mean, it's pretty authentic. And I had on, remember Earth sandals?
Oh, all too well. And Earth shoes, and yes.
Yeah, and then, of course, the things on the feet. But anyway, I went as one of the emperors of Rome. That was basically it. better than the one in 1979 when I went as Pope John Paul George Ringo the first, and damn near got my ass kicked.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but, well, not really. This woman, I was out there dancing, and this woman had on a pectoral-type cross, and I really shouldn't have done that. But I was on the dance floor, and she ripped the cross off. So I figured, well, but this, I had this other friend who was just a wizard with thread. He was from Manchester, England, and he had designed the costume, and it looked just like the thing you would see in the Vatican, honestly and truly. Buttons, everything, cassock, and you know, the around the belt and all that stuff, the cummerbund, or I'll call it that for lack of a better term. But, you know, Halloween's always been real dear to me, like I said, you know. In my days, a trick perhaps meant two good treats.
Yeah.
I'll tell you two quick stories. One's a joke and one's a real story that my mother told me, okay?
All right.
The first is this church had a Halloween party, a come as your favorite hymn party. Have I told you this before?
I'm not sure if you have, but I think I know it. But I only know the punchline. Go right ahead.
Well, they had a come as your favorite hymn party, and the minister or the parson or whomever had to just. And first he went to Sister Olga, who had this thing of light bulbs turned around her waist. And he said, "Sister Olga, could that be Let the Lower Lights Be Burning?" And then came Sister Marie, who was just, well, she came naked. He said, "Well, that's pretty daring, Sister Marie, because what is this, just as I am?" Then he came to Brother John, who had wheat things tied around his waist, and he said, "Brother John, this is really unique. Could this be bringing in the sheaves?" He said, "I can tell you one thing right now, if that woman had put on some clothes, it's going to be coming through the rye."
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. Second story, and this actually happened to my mother and my grandparents' home. It's a real big place, about 100 acres around it. And the parents had gone out on Halloween to some type of thing or whatever, I don't know, but they left the girls at home, and my Aunt Catherine was the oldest, and she was the babysitter. My mother was just a child. And her Aunt Frances, my Aunt Frances, was there, who was like middle-aged, I guess, between Catherine and my mother. And they heard this noise downstairs, and they both went to one room and locked the door. Of course, these doors and these houses were so thick. I mean, they were really thick.
Okay. Solid wood, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Solid. Cost about $1 million today to do it.
Absolutely. And they heard someone coming up the stairs, and they were all in the same bed just clutching each other because they had already, you know, were in their nightgowns. And there was all this splintering on the door. And it was just a real cacophony. I mean, my mother said she was just scared to death. And luckily that door held. But a couple hours later, when her parents came home, they found on the dining room table all the cutlery, butcher knives. Someone had even gone to the outbuilding and gotten anything with a blade on it and placed it on the dining room table.
Ew.
And the door was just splintered, and the police came by the next day asking them, or the sheriff or whomever, if they had seen anybody unusual, and they said, "Come and look at this door," and come in, and they had left everything out of the dining room table. I mean, there were like there was a scythe and all types of farm equipment that had an edge on it. And they said, "Well, we're tracking a mental psychopath who is the killer who has escaped from a nearby lunatic asylum." I'll tell you, that'll put some lead in your pencil.
Oh, I haven't any doubt.
But my mom used to tell me that story, you know, and you know it was. And I said, "You got to be kidding me." She says, "No, it is true." And of course, I asked her sisters who were still alive then. You know, they said, "Oh yeah," and said we were scared for our lives and we're in the bed clutching each other around. And it was only by the luck of a good carpenter and strong open doors that door held. I mean, this is something that John Carpenter and Deborah Hill would have loved to have gotten hold to for a movie.
Yeah, that's chilling.
Really is. You know, that's something from my past that I've never forgotten. But you. Halloween has always been I loved Halloween better than Christmas because everybody would, you know, get up and dress up and go out to parties and stuff like that. You didn't have any real obligations as far as gifts were concerned. And, you know, there was none of this commercial strain on it. It was who could be the most innovative and who could be, you know, the very best well turned out. And, it was just a lot more fun. I mean, sometimes Christmas can really be a very bad obligation on people because they're buying things for people that they don't need or don't want or they can't afford. And it's lost all of its true meaning as far as, you know, what it really means about. But nonetheless, Halloween was sort of like, you know, a special time of makeup and fantasy and belief and legends and mysterious things. And it's always been a special place in my heart.
Well, it should be lighthearted. It should be fun. And I hope I don't wake up in the morning and find the house that has been egged and toilet papered.
They put billiard balls on your house during the campaign whenever?
No, actually, it was this past summer. They didn't put them. They threw them at it.
Billiard ball?
Yeah, a billiard ball. A 13, as a matter of fact. Aiming for the living room window.
Well, somebody down there loves you, I guess, Bob. What can I say?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a pretty lovable guy.
Yeah.
When I'm not getting a little, frustrated when I go into the local convenience store to get myself a bottle of pop and walk in and the first thing I hear is the N-word and the next word I hear is Obama. And, you know, it's like a clavern meeting down there.
Mm. I wonder how many Obama masks are being worn this year.
Well, got worn to Jenny Stewart Medical Center in Kentucky.
Well, besides that, I mean, if they had a mask, I'm sure they made them out and they're going to use those type of things.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Particularly off after all the frustrating press that he has received, and I'm sure that the people who made the mask are going to get a return on their investment. That's for damn sure.
And that's the whole thing. And I think that's the point of Dr. John's note. It made really good sense to me.
Uh-huh.
These things, you know, it's not necessary. These things are made. You could say that in a way it's a matter of fostering a certain attitude.
Oh yeah, I mean costumes like that basically reflect the political mood and of course the political mood of the manufacturer, that type of thing. Not to mention the bad press the whole administration has been getting about a lot of things, in particular the failure of the website and all this stuff for healthcare.gov. And oh, I'm sure they're going to dine out of that for years. You know,
I have no doubt.
But anyway, I did see Secretary Sebelius being, my God, it was
harangued.
It was almost everything but an awesome buffet. I mean, there was one guy up there who was just really disrespectful, you know, demanding a yes or no answer. I thought to myself, you know, this congressman who was on the committee, I said, who are you, Roland Freisler, Hitler's judge, or Vyshinsky, Stalin's procurator, you know, the way he was, he really treated that lady badly. I mean, it almost came off the hinges there, it really did.
You see these things, Jim, and you wonder if one of these days somebody's just going to stand up and say, you, I'm out of here.
Well, you know, that's exactly what I probably would have done. Of course, you couldn't.
Well, that's why we're not there and they are.
And, you know, and what they were trying to do was to blame the president, and this guy just kept asking the same question over again, over again, over again. And I think Waxman just yelled, point of order, point of order. This is going nowhere. And luckily, the gentleman's time had expired. And, I wouldn't call him a gentleman.
And what do you want to bet that the individual doing the questioning immediately turned that into a fundraising letter saying, see how I stood up to the Obamacare thugs?
I think he was from Louisiana.
Wouldn't surprise me in the least.
A Republican, yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I've taken up too much of your time. You got other people waiting. I wish you a happy, a safe All Hallows Eve, and tomorrow is All Saints Day for those who subscribe to it. And after
or as we call it around here, Dad's birthday.
Is that your dad's birthday?
My dad's birthday, yeah.
Oh, okay, your dad's birthday. Well, then on November 2nd, of course, is All Souls Day, in which you remember those who passed over.
Yes, indeed. Jim, you have a good evening and a happy Halloween.
Yeah, by the way, I took off the tiara and I put on a Cossack hat.
Well, you know, I was going to say, you don't want that falling in the toilet, the tiara.
No, but I had this Cossack hat that I bought in Leningrad years ago, and it's held up marvelously well. Of course, it's just too hot to wear it because, I mean, when you put something like that on top of your head with the hair, I mean, good Lord, you're going to look like you've been in a sauna, but... Anyway, I just thought I would tell you that, too.
I'm glad. I think, with the French maid's costume and a Cossack's hat, that would mean you would have to, I mean, French maid's costumes being French maid's costumes, you kind of have to you'd have to kind of go the side saddle route, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, you'd have to. I was just kidding about that, good Lord in heaven. But listen,
don't spoil our illusions.
That's fine. All over TCM this afternoon. They've had a complete festival of Hammer, Seven Arts, with Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. And it's just been a real ride through the 50s and 60s for me to see these movies, which were really done I think Charles Gray, remember him?
Mm-hmm.
And all these people, except for Christopher Lee, are gone, but they sure played their roles well. And in spite of being maybe low budget and stuff like that from Hammer Films, they were damn good movies, and they were good gothic horrors. And you didn't have to have some guy in a...
with a chainsaw.
Or a hockey mask who is constantly going, you know, being obliterated and then rising back and stuff like that, and just murdering beautiful, attractive young people. That's just something I never really got into.
No, well... my kids watch those things. They're like, hey, Dad, you want it? No, I don't.
I don't blame you. I mean, those slasher movies, I mean, you know, after a while you just become inured to them. But when I first saw them, I thought, oh, God, this is not even good cinema. I mean, you know, just horrible-looking individual. I mean, at least those vampires and certain, like Christopher Lee would play, at least he had a little bit of class. At least he...
Frank Langella.
Yeah, at least he, oh, yeah, oh, oh, God, have mercy.
Struck a nerve.
Yeah, when he did that, that's when I hung out a Red Cross thing saying blood bank. I mean, now, he was one attractive man and just was very, very suave and sophisticated and just, of course, some of the underground scenes of that thing, the remnants of his work weren't too pleasant, but... He certainly was very attractive to look at. That's for damn sure.
Meanwhile, I think Renfield is serving on the Supreme Court of the United States under the name Samuel Alito.
Probably so. You know, anything in that movie, Tom Waits played Renfield in that movie.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I'd forgotten that.
Tom Waits. I can remember this friend of mine who used to just bombard me with Tom Waits songs that I just could not stand that guy. And he would play one song that just grated on my nerves called Charlie, I'm Pregnant.
Oh, I love Tom Waits. Oh, Jim, you break my heart.
I'm sorry, I just never cared for him. I mean, G-strings and pasties and all this stuff that he used to do in that voice that he sounded like he smoked 19 cartons of cigarettes or whatever.
Yeah, Chesterfield Unfiltered, thank you very much. Yes.
Oh, God. Oh, I just never cared for him. I was a Brian Ferry freak at the time, you know, Roxy Music and all that. But, you know, that's not to hear for discussion. But anyway, I'll bid you a good evening, and I hope you have a safe passage through the night and day after tomorrow. Remember all those people that you love who are not with us.
Absolutely, and don't get a runner in your fishnets.
No, 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 no. Okay.
All right.
You
bye, Jim.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Blood bank. Here, there's a lot of stuff that's pretty much standard stock and trade in Halloween. I've got a short story here, though, that I will warrant you have never even heard of. And it has to do with exactly this area where I live. And it is by an author who, a West Virginia author who died by his own hand well before his time and is commonly mentioned in the same breath as the young Hemingway, the early writings of F. Scott Fitzgerald, that sort of stuff. So hopefully we'll get to that. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, that's an evil laugh, Bill.
Well, yeah, I had a lot of years of practice. Yes. That was the one I usually gave to club owners when they didn't want to pay me, you know, it's the way that goes. But I had to say something quick to Jim. I hope I didn't come across
insultingly
to the southern guys.
No, you didn't. You didn't at all.
Those guys on both sides, and regardless of what they looked like or what uniform they wore, I don't think I'd have the guts to this day, you know. The first trip to Gettysburg, I was walking. It was February, late February, and it was pretty warm. It's, 13 miles above the Mason-Dixon line. It was warm, much warmer than Cleveland was. And I got around this area called Spangler Spring, which was an area where wounded from both sides had dragged themselves to get water on July 2nd. And Bob, something came over me, just scared the living crap out of me, and I took off moving as fast as I could back toward the city area where there was people. Because there was nobody out there, but it was dusk, you know? And it's just like, whoa. And then one of my other trips, I was there with my first wife, and she was an RN, and it was a hot day. And we were up in the area of the first day's battle up north of the city where I guess it was the Confederate Second Corps and the Union 11th had a meeting of the minds. And I said to my wife, I said, touch my arm. She said, Bill, it's cold. I said, let's get the hell out of here. There's things like that you can't explain, that you don't know what it is that did it to you. But Halloween as a kid, yeah, it was plenty of, man, you talk about instant diabetes. Holy God. The stuff at Parmadale, they'd give us powdered sugar donuts and, you know, that candy corn stuff?
Oh, yeah. My father adored that stuff. Yeah. But only the Brock's sure. brand, and not B-R-O-C-K, B-R-A-C-H.
Yeah, I remember Brock's candy. Yeah, I didn't even know if they're still in business anymore.
Oh, yeah.
They are still. And so we ate like pigs, and we played, pin the tail on a donkey. Now, the one I thought was pretty rough was to shoot the apple off of somebody's head. I didn't think that kid should be doing. I'm being silly. We didn't go that far. But in later years, when I went back to live in the projects after I got out of the great place, there was a lot of fighting going on down there on Halloween night. It was, go out and who are you going to run into? And then in later years, when I was back in a little more suburban neighborhood, cheap wine. You know that Sneaky Pete?
Oh.
Oh, that Thunder.
Lancers, Wild Irish Rose.
Oh, you name it. Bally High. I remember I had drinking that one night.
Whoa.
I think that was a funny day because the next morning I took my and to my mother to the cemetery where my grandparents are, where their parents were, my grandparents. And, man, I felt so sick all over from that cheap wine. I thought the best thing they can do is leave me here tonight or today, this morning. Just lay me down there and forget about it. Only you can take off. But they couldn't drive, so I had to drive them home. So Halloween was a big deal. But when we were project kids and that, there was a lot of rumbling. And hell, my granddad told me that when he was a kid, which would have been, he was born in 1873 or something like that. So when he got, those kids used to, he told me they would take people's farm wagons, take them apart and reassemble them on top of a roof as much as they could. And then the guy was stuck trying to get the damn thing back down again, you know. Trick-or-treat, it could really, and, well, of course, the, I don't know, this is more in your area of the world, tipping somebody's outhouse over. Hopefully when somebody was in it, you know, that was the real fun of the whole thing. But this, but the story the old guy told me when he was in his 70s. So there was a certain amount of trick-or-treat. But you hit it right on the nose. I had forgotten where it came from. And, you hit it talking about getting the sheep down and, the end of the,
Or in some cases, holding the sheep down. No, no, I'm sorry.
Well, it depends on what kind of people they were. You never know. I'm not going to say anything.
Well, those summer evenings are kind of long and lonesome.
Well, there used to be jokes about that too, Bob, which I won't go into right now.
Oh, I got one right now. A bunch of northern fellows came down to work a construction job in West Virginia. And the whole time they were working here, the West Virginia boys kept telling them about how they'd, you know, go out and, you know, have a sheep. And the northern boys were, you're joshing us. You don't really do that. You know. So the time came, the job was done, the northerners were going back, and they said, yeah, come on out, we'll go. Yeah, we'll show you. You've been saying we don't. We'll go show you. We do that. So they go out down some long, lonesome road, and lo and behold, there's a field of sheep. And the West Virginia fellas telling you, just go out there and have your way. So the first northern fella jumps the fence and runs out there, and by the time he comes back, all the West Virginia boys are laughing. Laughing, all fit to be tied. And he says, I know you guys was having us on. You guys don't really do that. And all of a sudden the West Virginia boys look up and say, no, you got an ugly one.
Well, there was a story about the...
I'll catch hell for that one.
The guy Jones joined the Foreign Legion and... new officer, and he doesn't know what the fellas do for enjoyment. And he asked one guy, what do you fellas do? He says, the other officer says, well, we usually take the horse, and the guy says, no more, I don't want to hear about it. So anyway, the guy gets, the new officer gets caught messing around with the horse, and the other officer comes over and says, sir, what I was going to tell you is that most of the men get on the horse and ride over to town. Yeah, that was a terrible old joke. But while I'm talking about that, I will mention the children's place that I stayed in Cleveland here. And in those days, it was run by religious folks. And now they've got trained people, trained workers to work with kids. They just arrested one for sending a young 13-year-old out as a hooker. So I have a terrible attitude sometimes towards people in that field or social workers. Because like everybody else, you got to be careful who you hire to do certain jobs. And that's all there is to it. I mean, come on, I've learned that when you hire a carpenter who, you tell him cut down that table, and by the time he's done a table that was, 4 feet tall is now 2 feet tall and still uneven, you know.
And it's a rickety footstool.
Or the guy that I didn't feel like putting a gas line on my van. So I said to the guy, what do you want? It was a cheap price. It's okay, put a new gas line on. That damn truck would run 10 minutes and stall. And I ended up checking all the way back on the tank, including pulling the rubber hose off the tank and dropping it in gasoline, and the thing ran fine. So that leaves only one thing, Bob, the gas tank, right?
You'd
think. You know how much work it is to drop a gas tank?
Yes.
So I dropped the gas tank, took it to a friend of mine who had a welding shop, and he also would repair tanks. He didn't have a torch out. He wasn't doing it. He was checking. And he says, Bill, there's nothing wrong with this thing. So I get back, and I take the clamp off the rubber hose, which is on the end of... There's a big crack under the clamp. I just about went through the roof. When I went to see that so-called mechanic, and I just reamed his butt out. I said, you know, if I wanted it done incompetently, I said it was just too cold for me to do it myself, and I expected a professional to do it right. Otherwise, I wouldn't have wanted to pay you. So this happens. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens to this, because, you know, they don't get... those were the Sisters of Charity of St. Augustine used to run the place. And they ran a good hospital here and an infant home, and that seemed to be their area of expertise. And they don't get them anymore. They, you know, I'd like to see a statistic on how many people are joining convents today as compared to what...
Not a lot.
Yeah, it was an honor for... large Catholic families to have a son who became a priest or a brother and a woman who became a nun.
A lot of that has fallen off in the so-called developed world.
Yeah, I guess it has. Because you had to give up everything. And we had a few people out there. When I was there, a couple of these women were kind of shaky. They were, you know, there's an event in people's lives, the so-called change of life can be a horrendous situation. I guess we have it ourselves, men, but it's a lot different. It's not as physical as it is psychological, you know, as you get to a certain age. But anyway, I'll clear the line. But Halloween was it was a funny time. It could go great fun, and but man, it's typical. When you live in certain areas and you got adolescence, you know what's going to happen, don't you?
Well, you do.
Adolescence, that's... that whole teenage thing of the 1950s was still... Well, I still caught on to the last section of that in my growing up years. And, you know, if you didn't have a macho attitude, something was wrong with you. You know, the other guys... So you developed one just so people would leave you the hell alone, you know? Anyway, you take care of yourself.
All right, Bill, you have a good night.
Good night.
Bye now. Mr. Stress, our buddy Bill from Cleveland. And that's the thing about Halloween is it's supposed to be cathartic. It's got a deep, deep, deep cultural background. But what is how can Halloween be frightening when everyday life is so much more so? I had no idea there was a place called Mango, Florida. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. But there is. About 11,000 people in Mango, Florida, and they have, of course, a First Baptist Church of Mango, Florida. And, of course, the First Baptist Church of Mango, Florida has a youth ministry. Got to have a youth ministry. That means you got to have a youth minister. Enter William Richardson, then age 45. The photograph I'm looking at of William Richardson really does look like something out of a horror movie. He has no neck. He's great and ponderous and pendulous and unshaven with jowls, and his beard doesn't match his hair, and it looks like he kind of parts it in the middle so that, well, growing up we called that a butt cut. William Richardson came along to the First Baptist Church of Mango and volunteered to be their youth minister. And they said, well, come on in, brother. Didn't run a background check. Didn't nothing. No. No, just suffered the little children to come unto William Richardson. William Richardson has lately been charged with capital sexual battery after a little girl who is now 11 told someone at her school that William Richardson, youth minister, had been sexually molesting her over a 3-year period. It had occurred, according to investigators, several times, at least once in the past year. And it happened during Sunday school services. The church, of course, being ever mindful of its duty to not get sued, immediately said, we had no idea this was going on. We didn't know it happened until he done got arrested. Youth Ministries Director Nita Allred said, I'm so sorry this happened. You trusted the children with me, and I'm so sorry. That's all I can say. The police are looking for additional victims. I told you about the tradition of toilet papering houses. The Chattanooga Times Free Press with a story out of Franklin County, Tennessee. The county seat of Franklin County is Tullahoma. And that is where Dale Bryant Fires saw some kids getting in the spirit of Halloween about 11 days early. And apparently, Dale Bryant Fires lives near to Huntland school principal Ken Bishop. Dutiful neighbor that he was keeping watch. And that's when he saw a bunch of teenagers toilet papering Huntland school principal Ken Bishop's house there in Franklin County. Well, immediately, Dale Bryant Fires recognized that freedom was under assault. And I can only imagine that upon seeing these teenagers toilet papering the house of their school principal, that he immediately exclaimed, Wolverines! And went and got the old family shotgun. Franklin County Sheriff's Office spokesperson Sergeant Chris Guess told the Chattanooga Times Free Press, some kids got out at a residence over there to roll it with toilet paper, and this gentleman, notice the use of the word gentleman for Dale Bryant Fires, this gentleman came out of his residence a couple of houses over and shot one of the teenagers who was rolling this other guy's yard. The gentleman shot the kid, the teenager. Sergeant Guess continued and described the teenager's injuries. He got peppered pretty good. The problem is they weren't on Farris's property, and they were not doing anything to his property. Notice that that's a problem. The teenager in question received wounds in the right foot, inner left knee, right palm, right thigh, and right side of his torso above the waistline. Sergeant Guest said, you know, it's just one of them random things. The bond was set for Dale Bryant Fires at $125,000. Charges against him in Franklin County General Sessions Court. Hint, I'm pretty sure that's the small claims court in Tennessee. If I'm wrong, tell me. The charges were aggravated assault and reckless endangerment. No shooting within 500 feet of a dwelling, if that crime even exists in Tennessee. No attempted murder. Or not even attempted manslaughter. Because after all, it's a random thing. Kid got peppered pretty good. But really, my favorite line from the Chattanooga Times Free Press story is, problem is they weren't on his property. They weren't doing anything to his property. You see, it wouldn't have been a problem if they had been on his property or doing something to his property, because he could have come out and give them the killing that they so righteously deserved. So apparently, at least in Franklin County, Tennessee, peppering with a shotgun a teenager is not something that one describes as being a symptom of our absolutely gun-mad culture. No, hell no. It's just a random thing. At best, it's aggravated assault and reckless endangerment. So if you know anybody that way, tell them not to be rolling any yards in Estill Springs, Tennessee, unless Mr. Farce come out and do another random thing. The boy, by the way, was 15 years old. And remember, Mr. Farce is, by God, a gentleman. And gentlemen don't commit attempted murder. Gentlemen do random things. Got it? Yeah. So we're about at the halfway point of tonight's Halloween Thorn in the Side Thursday edition of The Horn. We'll take a little break. I might note that we have spent the week in another one of those holes, and this being the last day of October, it's the last chance to not finish October in a hole. The hole, as best as I can calculate it, is $385 deep. If we could get 35 people, 38 people, 35 people, 30 people, 25, do I hear 20? 15, do I hear 10? At 10 bucks a piece, it would go a long way toward paying bills. That's what we call it around here. It is your kind contributions that keep all of this going. And the deficit, as far as best I can calculate it, is at present $385. Your help by visiting the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com or by using the traditional mail address, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. It's entirely up to you, but either way, it's the sort of thing that helps us keep all of this rolling. So, yeah, a little Halloween tunage, and then what I expect to be the Halloween edition of the Green News Report is on its way on this Horn in the Side Thursday. This is The Horn. We call it Conversation Radio, what we do here. I'm Bob Kincaid.
looks astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Just a jump to the left.
And then a step in the right.
With your hands on your hips.
You can't see me. No, not at all. In another dimension, with voyeuristic intention. Well secluded, I see all.
With a bit of a mind flip,
you're into the time slip.
And nothing can ever be the same.
You're spaced out on sensation.
Like you're under.
It's Thursday, October 31, Halloween, 2013.
Stop fighting for our generation! Stop the pipeline!
Okay.
Oh, no, no. That's okay.
Students disrupt Obama's healthcare rally to protest Keystone XL pipeline. Koch Brothers pipeline spills in Texas. Spain's remarkable solar record. Plus,
there's no technological or economic limitation to solving these problems.
Stanford confirms renewable energy can provide 100% of the world's energy needs.
All of those needs and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I don't trust vegetables. So when I carve pumpkins, it's not for Halloween. It's a warning. This is what I do to you.
This is what we do to you. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it's Halloween week. Are you scared?
Not in the least, except about the $7 billion every year that Americans spend on Halloween candy, costumes, and decorations.
Why would you be frightened of that? That's a good thing. It helps the economy. What's wrong with that?
Well, actually, most of it's made overseas, used just once, and then thrown in the trash. This is a great time to start thinking about your holidays. Get tips to upgrade your celebrations at our website without trashing the planet.
So you're going dressed as a grump again this year for Halloween?
Apparently.
Yeah. What other scary news do you have for us today?
Well, not so very scary, student protesters from climate activist group 350.org disrupted President Obama's health care speech at a rally in Boston on Wednesday, calling on him to reject the controversial proposed Keystone XL pipeline from the tar sands of Canada.
Stop climate change for our generation! Stop the pipeline! Mr. President!
Okay. Oh, no, no. That's okay. That is the wrong rally. We had the climate change rally back in the summer. This is the healthcare rally.
I would argue, in fact, that this was exactly the right rally. Had they chanted at the climate rally, who cares? You chant at the healthcare rally, everyone reports it.
Right, and 350.org has many further protests and climate actions planned for the months ahead.
Scary.
For the moment, though, the Keystone XL pipeline approval is on hold, probably till mid-2014.
Yeah, also scary.
Even scarier, the Canadian government is so intent on exploiting and exporting its tar sands oil that their federal government now confirms it will speed up approvals of new tar sands mining projects by no longer requiring environmental impact studies on those new projects.
Unbelievable.
This news comes as new studies showing people living downwind of the tar sands projects are suffering higher rates of blood cancers.
We're going to have to stop those studies, too. Why do we need to know about the health effects? Why do we need to know about anything? Just drill, damn it.
Speaking of pipelines, America's newest oil spill is on a pipeline owned by the billionaire Koch brothers.
Also very scary.
It recently ruptured and spilled 17,000 gallons of crude oil in a field outside of Austin, Texas. Earlier this month, an Associated Press investigation revealed that high numbers of pipeline spills go unreported to the public. In North Dakota alone, AP's investigation found nearly 300 pipeline spills in just the last year. But state officials did not report any of those spills to the public.
So the state found out about it. They just didn't tell anybody.
That's right.
Unbelievable.
And speaking of spills, the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico continues to hurt fishermen who report that oyster season is a bust this year because there are no oysters to harvest thanks to BP's oil spill over 3 years ago. But some good news, a solar thermal plant in Spain has just broken the world record, providing round-the-clock 24-hour solar power for 36 days straight, including at night. The Gemma Solar Concentrating Solar Thermal Plant stores the sun's heat in vats of molten salt, which then generate electricity at night, and it's been doing so for 36 days in a row.
Wow.
Finally, contrary to popular myth, renewable energy sources are capable of replacing fossil fuels and providing 100% of the world's energy needs. Late-night talk show host David Letterman interviewed Stanford University professor Mark Jacobson on America's vast clean energy potential.
There's enough wind to power the entire world for all purposes, around seven times over, and solar about 30 times over in high solar locations worldwide.
Stanford is developing 50 plans specifically tailored to each of the 50 states, giving them a pathway to get all of their energy 100% from renewable sources. Be sure to check out the full interview at greennews.bradblog.com. I just want to end with this optimistic note from Professor Jacobson.
Everything will be okay if we collectively put our mind to it. There's no technological or economic limitation to solving these problems. It's a social and political issue, primarily.
Well, this report started scary, and then it got a little bit less so by the end.
Yeah.
Party pooper. For much more scary news, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report and keep us on your public airwaves. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Boo.
Scary monsters. By the last breath of the four winds that blow, I'll have revenge upon Fortunato. Smile in his face, I'll say, come, let us go.
I'm a cask of the Montelado, sheltered inside from the cold of the snow. Follow me now to the vault down below, drinking the wine as we laugh at the time which is passing incredibly slow.
You have to really give it to the Alan Parsons Project. I think that was their very first album, Tales of Mystery and Imagination, a musical retelling of, I almost said David Allan Coe, Edgar Allan Poe, thank you very much. That, of course, The Cask of Amontillado, or is it Amontillado? Don't know. It is about 13 minutes before the hour, and great thanks going out to Ken and to Cameron. We are $30 better than we were going into the break, and that means that we are now at $355 and counting, and a note coming in from Danny. Hey, Bob, As soon as I get to my computer at home, if I don't get mugged by the kiddies, just kidding, I think their trick-or-treating has been ruined by the rain, I'll kick in $50 to the Your Invaluable Show. And Dr. Bill, what a great show he does, too. Yes, he does. He absolutely does. I can't. There are not enough superlatives to describe the work that Dr. Bill is doing here. A note coming in via Twitter from Sandra. You'll love this. Bob, you'll be happy to know that a plurality of Americans narrowly believe it's acceptable to dress in blackface by a 43 to 37 margin. Well, I think, no. I'm not happy. No. What does it take? And then, of course, remember Matthew Pape from the University of Rochester in upstate New York last night? He claimed that his heritage was being violated because he couldn't fly the Confederate battle flag in his window. Learning curve is just too steep for some folks, I guess. Too steep for some residents, or at least one resident, in a neighborhood of Norfolk in the Old Dominion of Virginia, the Commonwealth. You might recall the story we had last night of the irate school teacher from Akron, Ohio, who posted an invective-laced Facebook rant about his objection to certain people with certain skin colors. Well, not to be outdone, we go to Norfolk, Virginia. It is a posting that appeared on the Rants and Raves portion of the Craigslist site for the city of Norfolk. That posting, according to WTKR.com, had been put up as a reminder that overage trick-or-treaters, in other words, older than 12 years old, were forbidden in Norfolk to go trick-or-treating. Well, you can't go trick-or-treating. The original post, however, read as follows, telling them to stay away from the Larchmont Edgewater neighborhood. We're a white neighborhood, and we don't want you baboons here. You little turds better think twice going into my neighborhood, or you'll be legally punished. Oh, please. And another person followed up, saying, stay in your own neighborhoods. We whites don't come to your neighborhoods to trick-or-treat because we know you, and there's the magic word, will try to rob us and molest our children. Hide your children, hide your wife. Keep your little, well, here's a new word, N-I-G-L-E-T-S. Bless my soul. Keep your little in your own neighborhoods. Any N-I-G-L-E-T-S who come to my door will receive last year's stale candy. Which apparently means that that person has been hanging on to Halloween candy from last year, specifically in case any little N-I-G-L-E-T-S's should happen to oh, my God. This country. Oh, well. But what do we expect of people in Norfolk, Virginia, or Akron, Ohio, when, in fact, the daddy of, say, a suddenly famous Texas senator, who shall remain nameless except for the fact that we shall call him Ted Cruz, when his daddy takes to his tax-free pulpit and says the following.
I want to introduce to you, and I'm not going to take a lot of time, he's got the story, but he is a wonderful, wonderful man, a wonderful patriot, a wonderful American. He's a minister and a true conservative American. So at this time, I'd like to introduce you to Raphael.
Raphael Cruz. This is in Hood County, Texas. I only mention that it's in Hood County, Texas, because the irony of it being in Hood County, Texas, whose county seat is apparently Bedsheet, and it's run by Mayor Klegel. Oh, well, you'll get it. And they're giving him a standing ovation. We got people wearing American flag shirts, and he's motioning for them to sit down,
thank you very
sit
much.
Down.
Well, before I start, I just need to say thank you to each and every one of you. I know that many of you work very hard to help my son become the next U.S. Senator from the state of Texas. So I want to say thank you for your hard work, for your commitment. God bless you all. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so this goes back. This goes back to the campaign trail in which Raphael Cruz, and I still have to get the Raphael quote from being there. You tell Raphael I have a message for Raphael. He was out on the hustings. Hustling the fundies, big old phony that he is, for his son, whom he has declared is the anointed coming king messiah of America. No, he really has. It's not a joke. Just to get a little taste of him. I mean, I didn't say that.
You know, very interesting. If you look at the Declaration of Independence, you find a series of grievances against the King of England. Did you know that every one of those grievances were preached from the pulpits of America before they were penned on the Declaration? It was preachers like George Whitefield and others that were the forefathers of this country.
Not Thomas Jefferson. Agnostic, deist. Not Ben Franklin. Didn't give a damn. Not Universalist John Adams. Not deist George Washington. No, no, no. George Whitefield was the father of America. This is scary stuff. That's why we're running it on Halloween. And this is more of that same shtick that Raphael Cruz has been hustling out there about the Black Robe Brigade, or whatever the hell he calls them, who would preach on Sunday and go kill English soldiers on Monday through Saturday. We'll fast forward again.
And he said, I was not elected to be quiet. I'm not going to be quiet. I refuse to answer on the grounds that it is privileged. Unfortunately, let us say that he is in the lion's den, as I was sharing a little while ago. The lions are roaring from both sides. The lions are not biting because of all the prayers. So please keep the prayers up. Yes. Well, I'll tell you something. I'll pass my phone around. When Ted was in Abilene, what was it, a month?
Did he say he'd pass his porn around? What?
A month or so ago, Ted was in Abilene, and they found three people that were wearing these T-shirts. I don't know if you can see them from here or not, but just give me a minute.
Well, no, we can't see it, Raphael. This thing goes on for near an hour. I will not subject you to it.
Probability, your parents were conservative Democrats. The conservative Democrats of 30 years ago are Republicans today. That is a message we need to communicate, not just to Hispanics, but to African Americans, to people that are what Rush Limbaugh calls low information voters. And
wow, he's just called African Americans and Latino people low information voters. That's gonna be great. You know who this guy reminds me of more than anybody else? Rahm Emanuel's daddy. Because Rahm Emanuel's daddy, you may remember at the beginning of the Barack Obama's first administration, was taking some grief with his son being chief of staff and everything, was taking some grief about how Obama wasn't sufficiently obsequious to the state of Israel. And Rahm Emanuel's daddy said to these people, look it. My son is the president's chief of staff. It's not like he's some Arab scrubbing the floors. It really happened. Well, you've got a little taste here via the audio of the way Rafael Cruz works his tax-free hustle in order to see his son advanced. And of course, we've had the audio where he anoints him and lays his hands on him and declares him to be the Messiah come to save America. A king, describes him as a king. But it was in this particular speech where Rafael Cruz declared, no kidding, that Obama seeks to destroy all concept of God, and then in this video, posted on YouTube, Rafael Cruz, speaking to the Hood County Tea Party, urges the voters, and this is before, I guess, the election of 2012, urges the voters to send Barack Obama back to Kenya. In the name of Jesus, of course. In the same speech, he said the wicked were ruling Texas and America, and the wicked are Republicans in name only, who rule the United States. He also said Obamacare would cause people to commit suicide. He worked in the death panels. This guy's a real dandy. He said that Barack Obama is just waiting for an opportunity to take sides with Muslims against Christians. No kidding. You get the idea. And by the way, thank you very much. True to his word, Danny just kicked in $50 to help put a little bit of substance in the hole to get us up out of it before October ends. So that takes us to $305 to go. Thank you very much, Danny. Thank you. It's about 2 minutes past 8 o'clock. I had with regard to Rafael Cruz, I had a note here from our buddy the Angry Indian over on the Skype chat. He said, Bob, here's a right wing. Sort this out. Here's a right wing Cuban born guy talking about a capitalist African born in Hawaii of white Kansas slave owners' grandparents who has a son who was born in Canada who is a poor man's reboot of Joe Tailgunner McCarthy in drag. Does anybody else see a problem here, or is it just me? I don't think it's just you, Angry. In fact, I think we've got some confirmation here. Ron and Raleigh with the subject line, "He can kiss my low-information ass." Raphael can, that is. White people and people that want desperately to be white really chap my ass. It's not the meek that will inherit the earth. It will be the stupid after they've burned it to the ground. All too true. Now, not knowing how long this is going to take to read, I'm going to go ahead and do this because I've never shared this story with you before. And, you know, just in the name of Halloween and giving us all a good creep out, it's hard to beat this. I mean, I know the traditional canon would be maybe something from H.P. Lovecraft. As my buddy Rob noted on Facebook today, "Pardon me, can I take a few minutes of your time to tell you about my god Cthulhu's plan for your life?" Or maybe, certainly something from Edgar Allan Poe. This is neither of those. We have our own streak of creepy and scary here in Appalachia. Lots of ghost stories around hereabouts. In my own family tree, going back to some Welsh ancestors who came over this way, their name was Gwyn. And I was always told growing up that Grandma Lizzie's brother was a witch doctor. And what that meant is not the traditional vision that most people have when they hear witch doctor. He was a witcher. He was the son of Salathiel Gwyn. This is not the story, by the way. He was the son of Salathiel Gwyn, who was a first-generation American back in the 19th century. And he had the ability to find good, sweet water. He also had the ability to diagnose sick animals and prescribe herbal remedies for them. And to a certain extent, he did the same thing for people, too. And there is a story that has come down through our family of the time that some folks who had some really, really nice land for around here and a son who was unmarried, who was pursued by a woman from a family that were deemed to be wrong. And the story goes that he told the family, "Don't let her on the property. Don't let her anywhere near him." And for the longest time they didn't, and they continued to prosper. But eventually, the young man fell ill, and it turned out that she had been allowed on the property. The young man died, the animals got sick, and everything just went to hell. Those stories abound around here. Not too far from me is a little road that runs up a holler, and it's called Shade Creek. And a lot of people think that Shade Creek just means that it's a creek that runs through the shade. But in fact, its full name is Shades of Death Creek. Because the whole area, the whole creek, that road running by the creek, was said to be about as haunted as one place could be. That one could run into the spirits of long-gone native peoples.
and particularly that one could run into spirits of people who had been murdered along the road by highwaymen. A lot of that stuff got carried over from the old country. Highwaymen and such like. But it has those kinds of stories persist around here. Not too far from here, there's a historical marker about the only trial of which anyone is aware in which the defendant was proven guilty of murder by a ghost. True story. And when I was a little kid and we would come up here to visit, I remember for a couple of years, I wasn't allowed out after dark. Because someone was on the loose. And that brings us to this short story called Time and Again by a brilliant writer named Brees DJ Pancake. Mr. Weeks called me out again tonight, and I looked back down the hall of my house. I left the kitchen light burning. This is an empty old house since the old lady died. When Mr. Weeks doesn't call, I write everybody I know about my boy. Some of my letters always come back, and the folks who write back say nobody knows where he got off to. I can't help but think he might come home at night when I'm gone. So I let the kitchen light burn and go on out the door. The cold air is the same, and the snow pellets my cap, sifts under my collar. I hear my hogs come grunting from their shed, thinking I've come to feed them. I ought to feed them better than that awful slop, but I can't until I know my boy is safe. I told him not to go and look, but the hogs just squeal because I never kill them. They always squeal when they're happy. But he went and looked. Then he run off someplace. I brush the snow from my road plow's windshield and climb in. The vinyl seats are cold, but I like them. They're smooth and easy cleaned. The lug wrench is where it has always been, beside my seat. I heft it, put it back. I start the salt spreader, lower my shear, and head out to clean the mountain road. The snow piles in a wall against the berm. No cars move. They are stranded at the side, and as I plow past them, a line falls in behind me. But they always drop back. They don't know how long it takes the salt to work. They are common fools. They rush around in such weather and end up dead. They never sit still and wait for the salt to work. I think I'm getting too old to do this anymore. I wish I could rest and watch my hogs get old and die. When the last one is close to dying, I will feed him his best meal and leave the gate open. But that will most likely not happen because I know this stretch of Route 60 from Anstead to Golly. And I do a good job. Mr. Weeks always brags on what a good job I do, and when I meet the other truck plowing the uphill side of this road, I'll honk. That'll be Mr. Weeks coming up from Golly. I think how I never meet Mr. Weeks in my life but in a snow plow. Sometimes I look out to Sewell Mountain and see snow coming. Then I call Mr. Weeks. But we are not friends. We don't come around each other at all. I don't even know if he's got family. I pass the rest stop at Hawk's Nest, and a new batch of fools line up behind me, but pretty soon I'm alone again. As I plow down the grade toward Chimney Corner, my lights are the only ones on the road, and the snow takes up the yellow spinning of my dome light and the white curves of my headlights. I smile at the pretties they make, but I'm tired and wish I was home. I worry about the hogs. I should have given them more slop, but when the first one dies, the others will eat him quick enough. I make the big turn at Chimney Corner and see a hitchhiker standing there.
His front is clean, and he looks half frozen, so I stopped to let him in. He says, "Hey, thank you, mister. How far are you going?"
"Charleston."
"You got family there?" I say.
"Yes, sir."
"I only go to Golly Bridge, then I turn around."
"That's fine,"
he says. He's a polite boy. The fools pack up behind me, and my low gears whine away from them. Let them fall off the mountain for all I care. "This is not good weather to be on the road," I say.
"Sure ain't, but a fella's got to get home."
"Why didn't you take the bus?"
"Oh, buses stink," he says.
My boy always talked like that. "Where you been?"
"Roanoke. Worked all year for a man. You give me Christmas time and a piece of change."
"He sounds like a good man."
"You bet. He's got this farm outside of town. Horses. You ain't seen such horses. He's going to let me work the horses next year."
"I have a farm, but I only have some hogs left."
"Hogs is good business," he says.
I look at him. "You ever see a hog die?" I look back at the road snow.
"Sure."
"Hogs die hard. I seen people die in the war easier than a hog at a butchering."
"Never noticed.
We shot and stuck 'em pretty quick. They do right smart jerking around, but they're dead by then."
"Maybe."
"What can you do with a hog if you don't butcher him? Sell him?" "My hogs are old hogs. Not good for anything. I've just been letting them die. I make my money on this piece of road every winter. Don't need much."
He says, "Ain't got any kids?"
"My boy run off when my wife died, but that was considerable time ago." He's quiet a long time. Where the road is patched, I work my shear up and go slower to let more salt hit behind. In my mirror, I see the lights of cars sneaking up behind me. Then of a sudden, the hitchhiker says, "What's your boy do now?" "He was learning a mason's trade when he run off."
"Makes good money."
"I don't know. He was only a hod carrier then." He whistles. "I done that 2 weeks this summer. I never been so sore." "It's hard work," I say. I think, this boy has good muscles if he can carry hod. I see the lights of Mr. Weeks' snowplow coming toward us. I gear into first. I'm not in a hurry. "Scrunch down," I say. "I'd get in trouble for picking you up." The boy hunkers in the seat, and the lights from Mr. Weeks' snowplow shine into my cab. I wave into the lights, not seeing Mr. Weeks, and we honk when we pass. Now I move closer to center. I want to do a good job and get all the snow, but when the line of cars behind Mr. Weeks comes toward me, I get fidgety. I don't want to cause any accidents. The boy sits up and starts talking again, and it makes me jittery.
"I was kind of scared about coming through Fayette County," he says.
"Uh-huh," I say. I try not to brush any cars.
"Damn, but a lot of hitchhikers gets killed up here."
The man lays on his horn as he goes past, but I have to get what Mr. Weeks left, and I'm always too close to center. The boy says,
"That soldier's bones? Jesus, but that was creepy."
The last car edges by, but my back and shoulders are shaking, and I sweat.
"That soldier," he says, "you know about that?"
"I don't know."
"They found his duffel bag at the bottom of Lover's Leap. All his grip was in there, and his bones, too."
"I remember." "That was too bad." Snow makes such nice pictures in my headlights. It rests me to watch them.
"There's a big retard get killed up here, too. He's the only one they ever found with all his meat on. Rest of them, they just find their bones."
"They haven't found any in years," I say. The snow makes me think of France. It was snowing like this when they dropped us over France. I yawn.
"I don't know," he says. "Maybe the guy who done them all in is dead."
"I figure so," I say.
The hill bottoms out slowly, and we drive on to Gauley, clearing the stretch beside New River. The boys smoking and taking in the snow. It snowed like this in France the winter of 44, I say. I was in the paratroops, and they dropped us where the Germans were thick. My platoon took a farmhouse without a shot. "Damn," he says, "did you knife them?" "Snap their necks," I say. I see my man tumble into the sty. People die so easy. We come to Gauley where the road's already been cleared by the other trucks. I pull off, and the line of cars catches up, sloshing by. I grip the wrench. "Look under the seat for my flashlight, boy." He bends forward, grabbing under the seat, and his head is turned from me. But I'm way too tired now, and I don't want to clean the seat. "She ain't there, mister." "Well," I say. I look at the lights of the cars. They are fools. "Thanks again," he says. He hops to the ground, and I watch him walking backward, thumbing. I'm almost too tired to drive home. I sit and watch this boy walking backward until a car stops for him. I think, he is a polite boy, and lucky to get rides at night. All the way up the mountain, I count the men in France, and I have to stop and count again. I never get any farther than that night it snowed. Mr. Weeks passes me and honks, but I don't honk. Time and again I try to count and can't. I pull up beside my house. My hogs run from their shelter in the backyard and grunt at me. I stand by my plow and look at the first rims of light around Sewell Mountain through the snowy limbs of the trees. Cars hiss by on the clean road. The kitchen light still burns, and I know the house is empty. My hogs stare at me, snort beside their trough. They're waiting for me to feed them. And I walk to their pen.
Breece DJ Pancake. His short story, Time and Again. 20 minutes past the hour. Lines are open now that we've had our little bit of Halloween fun. 304-658-3333 if you want to take part in the conversation. On the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Let's go back for a minute to the Alan Parsons Project. Tales of Mystery and Imagination. Halloween. On the horn.
Yeah. No one with guilt to share, no secret thought to trust.
It's Halloween, so, you know, always beware the cold ending. It can catch you flat-footed sometimes. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Conversation Radio, The Horn. Let's go to the lines, 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bob, but
sorry about your Cardinals.
I am, too, a little bit. You know, in 1960-something, when the Cardinals played the Red Sox as a child, born in 58, Bob. Any case, I had three finches, different colored finches, Bob, and one of the finches I named was Carl Yastrzemski, because I was kind of like a peacemaker as a child, quite honestly. There was stress in that household of mine, the son of a Korea War infantryman, and a rather peaceful mother, Dirksen, by the way, from Illinois, who I guess I'm proud to say that Senator Everett Dirksen, even Southern Americans call him a statesman, you know, though they don't beat their chest, nor do Northerners, about the fact that he corners that administration, LBJ, to help sign the civil rights legislation that you know, A. Philip Randolph and Martin Luther King, and I guess the Bobby Kennedy was around the corner, but or well, in any case, hanging out around the corner at that point. But in any case, you know, but I don't hate Boston, and I'm not a hater of anybody. I used to get up early in Central Illinois and watch a Grambling play on, I think it was Saturday mornings. I'd get up and watch old public TV in the very early 70s just to watch Southern football because it was so damn cold where I was at. You see these guys wearing these mesh jerseys, very cold out, and I was like, look at their energy level. So exciting, still is to me and for the country, I guess I would say. Much of football reflects the energy level of the South, geographically speaking, to include USC, even though it's a warm weather state. But I'm not saying everybody's a wishbone offense. I don't follow the sport well enough to know any better. But thank you, Bob, for just. But you know, I thank you for being there every night, Bob. You're a real treasure to the country. You're a man that pursues peace, and you pursue a clean, reasonable environment, which I think the guy Rick Perry, the former Air Force war hero, oh, that's right, not a war hero, but Air Force person, didn't think that BPA needed to even be in existence, nor do any of their right-wingers. It was fun to call you and say happy Halloween, and make a comment to Bill, the gentleman that calls from Ohio. I always love listening to everybody's conversation, all y'all's conversations. And Bill, I don't want to use that adjective. It's just out of laziness, suffers a little bit from what many Americans suffer from, whether it's myself, Mark, or Bob's son, possibly. Maybe he's dealt with it, or Bob at one point, or any American, because of the pressure that we have to serve our country and our perception of uniform. You know, Bill studied the Civil War, and he knows a lot about a lot of things, and I don't know any more than the next guy, even though I'm an honorably discharged veteran. 11 years associated with the Marine Corps, volunteered for a lot of things, and I just, as a sensible veteran, Bob, I would say to Bill, if he's listening tonight, that I serve to defend y'all's civility. And if someone doesn't play jazz or someone doesn't have the ability to go to college and to learn or to raise a family peacefully and peaceably or to have a country worth defending, then all of that uniform and gung-ho-ness spirit is really for naught. So for the people that are listening tonight that have always been opposed to war, as a veteran, I never wanted war, but that I wanted to think I was defending something that may not have been as brave as my physical courage, though always knowing that my mental courage could be superseded by people, and that I wanted a country to come back to. I think that's part of our geography and our nature as a species. No matter whether we're coming back to Scotland 1,000 years ago or whatever, I think that's just in us as humans or to our families. But I just wanted to get that off my chest. I didn't want to offend Bill, but I just wanted him to know that him playing jazz is patriotism, because jazz.
Well, it's a beautiful sentiment, Mark.
Well, thanks, Bill. Yeah. I don't know how else to say it, Bill. I don't know what else to say, or Bob, but I just wanted him to know that I feel, and overtly and covertly, the United States did and does spend about $6 billion a year, $6 billion in overt and covert messaging through various means, whether it's, you know, in a restaurant or in, through movies or video games, to encapsulate young people's minds, and we're all vulnerable, whether we're 32, 22, or 12, and we need to be hyper vigilant. You know, I guess not a real religious person, maybe a little spiritual, but God's put some girls in my life, like the Kincaid family. But you know, I'm even vigilant about my own daughter, my own daughter's daughters. about their association with the number one aggressive military country in the world. So I just say this flippantly to yourself, because I think we kind of know each other. Though I'm a veteran for peace, I thought that we might want to threaten the gentleman Assad in Syria. And if he didn't respond to our initial threats, I agree with John Kerry and President Obama. And I'm not saying that that's what they were saying, but that if he didn't respond to the initial military responses, that we do directly target him, and not that I don't know the economics of the globe as well as they obviously would, and it's nowhere in comparison to a Libya situation, much more serious, because, you know, obviously we're talking about the Soviets have a small naval base there and various issues. And
now, of course, you know, the Israelis have taken matters into their own hands, Mark.
Well, and that's, I didn't know if it was summer solstice or Halloween or what it was, but I've been sleeping like a log lately, so apparently unable to explain it to myself. Obviously, it's the Israeli involvement, so let me get out and salute some Chinese made American flag quickly. I'm sure there's one around the area.
No kidding. I think they all are now. But yeah, the Israelis took it into their own hands today. They bombed a Syrian base where they were saying, but it was a Syrian base, as far as I can tell. Everything I've read says it was a Syrian government base, and the Israelis used as their rationale the fact that they thought that the missiles that were being delivered were going to be turned over to Hezbollah fighters.
Well, you know,
which just kind of made, what? At this point in time, I fear the Israelis are up for any excuse or no excuse at all.
Well, I think it's important that maybe the fact that you're in West Virginia and I'm in Florida, that we get along cordially, because they may have to step in here, or maybe like when University of Florida plays Georgia this weekend in Jacksonville. You know, I didn't know what you just said until you said it right now. Like I explained to some people that listen to my my observations that I work with, I say I apologize. It's Yankee sarcasm, but I didn't know that. And any kind of pressure, I believe they can put on the president, whether it's the Darrell Issa, the car burglar, the car alarm company owner, because he was such a car burglar. You have the hearings yesterday with Kathleen Sebelius. We have a lot of false pressure being put on the president. And then, of course, a couple of weeks ago, we did have the shutting down of the U.S. government and the dip in the economy there just a little bit. So I guess it's a concerted, what we say in the union, maybe what we're witnessing is concerted action. And that I don't deny if that's a reality. I think that they are on the offense. And actually, I was watching, you did have a caller a couple nights ago, and I know that you've caught it, maybe some of it yourself, but I don't think the president is in such a position that he would be a big enough threat to people in power that his life would be in jeopardy. But I think if we look at things realistically, if you can, what they did in Marine Corps boot camp forever, I know if you just look at the movie Full Metal Jacket, for anybody listening, they show a little bit of it. But when you can demonize or belittle a perceived enemy, it's easier for people to hurt them. So if you hurt...
Well, sure. I mean, if you consider, for instance, the training that we know that was being done during the Iraq disaster beginning in 2003... The boots were taught to refer to persons of Arabic descent as, and this makes no sense to me really, because it's, you know, wrong culture, Hajis.
We're a Haji, right, from India, and of course Americans from California to Alabama attacked Sikh separatists here in Los Angeles.
Right, and I don't know if you were listening earlier this evening, but the story coming out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana from earlier this month
where the 14-year-old kid in a junior high school walks up, pulls a lighter out of his pocket, and lights the hijab of a substitute teacher on fire.
Well, and how about your observation about the young soldier who comes back from a couple tours in Iraq or Afghanistan or one of those corporation wars, and decides to blow up his whole city block after he could blow up some black guy that allegedly wasn't having an affair with his wife, and now he's going to go ahead and declare incompetence and guiltiness for the sake of probably mental insanity. But, you know, it's what a kooky plagiarized circumstance. That, you know, it's all what I'm witnessing from the right, especially, is they're so concerned about momentum. If we see momentum to be gained by people with common sense, or I should say those on the left, for any of the corporatists that are listening, if there's any momentum, they'll find just the most arbitrary way to preclude that from occurring, and it could be the kookiest of reasons. So, I would say, as a soldier, that there are issues, and I would share with Bill, and I think that Bill's alluded to it, and I know that you've kind of addressed it, but you can look at Korea with the gentleman that ends the Korean War, or some of the senior leadership that takes over from poor General Smorlin at the end of Vietnam. You know, realize where some of these are from and what are the value systems, just like Smedley Butler, you know, the Smedley Butler, the Marine that is the son of Quakers that writes, you know, a war is a racket, and his parents were opposed to slavery. So, you know, but he is set up. He doesn't set himself up. He's not set up. But he's associated with veterans because he really cared about them at the inception and creation of the Veterans Administration, which George Bush Jr. and Dick Cheney, heavily decorated war heroes, want to hand over to Sears and Roebuck or whatever corporation that would
take these. Yeah, that'd be Halliburton.
That would be Halliburton, the fine oil corporation, which does not employ any, as the Marine Corps would say, indigenous personnel here domestically. But that would just be my personal observation, and nothing against non-indigenous forces. But I don't know. It's a lot of propaganda. They're so concerned with women. And I just would say, now that we talk about non-indigenous people, that isn't it ironic that the leader of the Tea Party is neither a Cuban or a Canadian, but he is a person that that is opposed to affordable health care. So that means he is for the insurance companies just running buck with raping the American population with profits, like an oil company, companies plural. So, but in Canada and Cuba, they have health care. Isn't ironic? But he can't be president. But. And I think you played a bit of his father's propaganda. Is this the early Somoza? Are we getting the Somozas now? Because, you know, I know we had the Kennedys, and Joe wanted to be, John Kennedy's father had interest in being president. But are we starting now to see in America a little bit of the, what many Caucasians would say would be the dictatorship of the left culture? It's my way or the highway, or we'll chop your heads off. So is that what, this guy Cruz, the Canadian Cuban, is that what his father is? Go send President Obama back to Kenya, even though he's born with an American mother and the grandson of a
in an American state.
In an American state, an American, and he is a Cuban, probably at his age, 70 something, maybe 80, born in domestic Cuba. Doesn't have the courage. Like, I ran into an electrician 15 years ago at a nuclear power plant in Florida, and he said, you know, he said it was about 150 people that took over Cuba. It wasn't 1,500, wasn't 15,000. It wasn't 150,000. It's just a small group of people. And because the people empathized with their common sense approach, but these brave, macho, fascists, that are all full of rhetoric today and are so close to Jesus, why didn't they stay and fight it? You know, if the United States, for all the right-wingers that might be listening, if we had a country full of Ted Cruz's fathers, we would be speaking English. I mean, did they... You know. But
that was a beaut. That I didn't see that coming. Oh, I'm sorry. We'd be speaking English.
I had to get you, but you know, it's a
toaster.
Thank you, ding ding. But you know, and not everybody in North America fought in the Revolutionary War. Was a small percentage, but you know, and I criticize a lot on some of the things when I have time to get to them, Bob. For all the right wingers that comment on Facebook and different crap. But, you know, everybody talks about the stupid ass founding fathers, which the majority were plantation slave owners. What about the 5,000 to 6,000 troops that are trumping around New Jersey? Who knows? They were from the Carolinas. They were from Scotland. They were from Germany or Poland or Africa.
Well, I mean, it was drunk ass hillbillies, Mark, who saved the revolution. Battle of Kings Mountain.
Is that what? You better believe it, and they...
I mean, the revolution would have collapsed had that can of whoop-ass not been opened up in the hills of Appalachia.
I've been over there, Bob, and they put it in to the bullshit flamboyance of the United Kingdom's approach to war, and actually, the bastard in charge of defending that mountain wore a very bright blue and white checkered shirt or some dumbass shit, it's like the Hessian influence that you see in the movie The Patriot, or you know, all these bright colors. Look at the British war. I'm not hateful, but the point is, it's so full of arrogance and ignorance.
Well, you know, bright red coats are fine if you're lining up 100 yards across from an army wearing bright blue coats. But most, this was guerrilla, the revolution was guerrilla warfare. But you brought up the actual soldiers who fought that war, Mark, and you remind me of so much of the stuff that I've learned from Dr. Bill O'Brien. We spend so much time talking about the framers and the founders, but so little talking about the common soldiers who actually fought and won the war. And you say, what of them? Well, the short answer for what of them is that they got effed. You know, bonds were issued to them in guarantee of payment in the currency of the new country. And it was not too long before before the really smart folks like Alexander Hamilton figured out, what if we... give them these bonds. And then what if the people who still have all the money here go and buy the bonds back for pennies on the dollar, and then they hold the bonds, and that way the wealth stays right where it is, and the people who fought and bled for the revolution can get stuffed. And that is precisely what happened, Mark.
That's exactly what happened. There was a very few people that squeaked out any kind of thing resembling a soldier's pension. And listening to your show reinforces, through yourself and Dr. O'Brien, what little knowledge, even a guy who kind of cares about things, his desire to try to educate himself about in this busy world that we live in, because our perception of history education in the country, which I don't besmirch our Department of Education, is very cursory at best, or just very superficial. I mean, it's the best that we can get. So, but if you dig into things, you can talk about King's Mountain. We can talk about things in detail and depth. And it was Bernie Madoff where they tricked the poor and uninformed, kind of like they still do today. And now, you know, and now, ironically, they want to not only privatize the Veterans Administration, they want to do away with soldiers' pensions and give them what they've been doing for the last, I would say, I went in the Corps, Bob, in 77. I would say they started doing this, I think, in the 80s, where they would buy out your contract a little bit. And now they want to make that kind of up and out in the open, literally, with J.P. Morgan's hands on the wheel. Who handles the death gratuity? I think I may have mentioned on another show that when soldiers get killed today, It's a $450,000 payout, maybe before taxes, but that the writer of the insurance policy is none other than J.P. Morgan. Now, it used to be the United States Army Officers Association, USAA, which has also been corporatized and privatized like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It's been taken over by Wall Street, but that, in fact, that every time one of our 8,000 soldiers getting killed dies, that they, J.P. Morgan, profits $1,450,000. $50,000 is put in escrow for administrative costs, which they'll probably gather after the war to pay for some interest or principal. But that the fact that the soldiers are paying $400,000, $350,000 after tax, and then they everybody in that one little section of Arlington, or at least they were, because they don't want Americans to see the flag draped aluminum coffin, which George Bush Sr. was good at not even letting them see the photographs.
Hey, Mark, let me turn your attention elsewhere for just a moment, if I may, please.
Sure.
I actually thought of you when I saw this story earlier today. Do you have any idea where Morton Grove, Illinois, is?
I don't know specifically, but I think it's one of the suburbs of Chicago.
Well, they've got an American Legion post there.
Okay.
And the American Legion post has contributed $1,000 a year for something called Party in the Park events, and they've contributed $1,000 for 4th of July fireworks and so forth. They've sponsored a yearly Easter extravaganza. They've paid for a Halloween family festival. But with regard to Party in the Park, a park commissioner came to the American Legion meeting to discuss it with them, and, of course, they called for the pledge, and the man's an atheist and would not say under God. And so the Post 134 commander, Joseph Lampert, told Parks Commissioner Dan Ashta, and this is a quote, Mark, "On behalf of our post, it is with some regret that we fully respect the right of individuals not to stand during the Pledge of Allegiance. All veterans have been willing to lose their lives for that right, and many have. With that being said, while we support that right, we do not accept it. Regrettably, we will be withholding funds from the Park District until such time that everyone rises for the pledge."
Well, I don't know if you remember. You remember the Blues Brothers? So they were making fun of the Hitler somewhere around Joliet, one of the right wing subdivisions there. I was just in response to that. Here's the ironic thing that I deal with on a personal personal note, and I don't deal with it much because I've already dealt with it, and that's why I'm more sympathetic to your views, and my views are your views. Is that my own father, as a child, used to make fun of the American Legion when I would go out by the city of Springfield Lake, and there was the American Legion thing there. And as a child, I was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and I'd go, in my mind, why isn't my dad all hep on this American Legion thing? A lot of flags and stickers and stuff out here, and he'd go by and smirk at it and go, oh, they're full of shit. And then older I got, I realized the American Legion was created by the insurance and banking company corporations and companies in our country's history that were set up to catch all the veterans coming back to let them know how unimportant labor unions were and your right to negotiate a living wage and other civilized standards. It made sense to me. But now I go back, haven't spoke to my father on a personal note since right after Bush stole the election through Al Gore winning the state of Florida by votes that they never counted. So I thought, well, I can't. I was working, as I mentioned to you, up in Minnesota, and I was coming back to Florida. I said, I can't drive all this distance without stopping. The weather was nice, and I almost didn't go when one day I spent in the suburbs of Chicago, and I thought, well, the next day I'll go check on him, see if he's even still alive. And I did go, and he wanted to talk about Korea war experiences, but, you know, they were not all that tremendous because, actually, in his personal time there, the war was working itself towards a seizure. So So, but my point is, the little bit I was there, he brought up a girl that works, Dana Perino, that works as a girl in Springfield, Illinois, on the news. I didn't give a shit about that. I didn't give a shit about Fox. And he brought up Bush's name. And it was right at the time when they were, a couple of weeks ago, when they were shutting down the government. I thought, how fucking stupid you have to be to see that the people that you're voting for are willing to knock the world's largest economy off its rails just to shut down affordable health care, affordable insurance, actually, still ran by Wall Street, for people that can't really afford the runaway cost for the country. And, but, you know, and so I did stop and say hi, and he wanted to talk about stuff, and I did not mention anything political. But the American Legion, I would suppose, even though I would not have the desire to ask him anymore, because I don't know what happened to his brain after 9/11 or what. Maybe he thinks he's a rich Republican that retired to northern Illinois because he grew up in central Illinois. The father lived in black projects as a white kid that looked like an Indian. And my mother told me before she died she thought that my grandmother may have been an Indian, or maybe even part black. She didn't know because he wouldn't say or wouldn't introduce her. My mother's a big, tall German girl with a lovely heart. Made straight A's to cat for 4 years. I saw her report cards. Very smart. So, you know, he wasn't stupid in trying to move up and marry out on the east side, but the ironic thing is now he's a registered rich white Republican, probably not too far from Downers Grove, where Congressman Patrick Walsh, the guy that doesn't pay for his child support, was beat by a real war veteran who I was defending on Facebook, Tammy Duckworth, who got both of her legs chopped off, saving her fellow soldiers' lives because she crashed her helicopter going forward instead of crashing it going backwards to save the 18 males probably predominantly in the back of the chopper. So, however, I mean, a lot of these dumbass right-wingers talk a lot about patriotism, but none of the kids that they actually are associated with make any true common sense. Like,
well, I've been ruminating all day, Mark, on what this remark means. While we support that right, we do not accept it. Well, if you don't accept it, you don't support it. I was just dumbfounded by this whole story. But we are, Mark, I have to say we are fast running out of time. It's been a wonderful conversation, though. I'm so glad you called in, and I thank you very much.
I thank you, and I think if I just would say, Bob, and I'm going to hang up, that little comment that Jack has made is actually fascism, and I think you and I both know that, and through that Air Force veteran.
Exactly. Take care.
All right, Semper Fi.
It's our buddy Mark. And we'll try one more call before we quit. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Happy Samhain.
Hey, happy Samhain, Jeremy.
Since Mark even brought up the Revolutionary War, I'll just make this real quick. A large part of the Revolutionary War, the naval battles, were fought here on Lake Champlain in Vermont. Between
absolutely.
The Green Mountain Boys, Ethan Allen, did a number on the British before Ticonderoga. So they were hillbillies, too, from Vermont, drunken hillbillies that did a lot of damage to the British. Also, in case people didn't know this, I know Bill's a historical person just like I am. The United States Navy really got its start here in Vermont, too, in a town not too far from here called Virginia. All the ships that were in the naval battles were built there and launched into the Champlain.
Exactly. Well aware.
You know, 'cause you got like 4 minutes.
Well, I do. So, thank you, and again, happy Samhain, and we'll talk soon, Jeremy. Take care.
Yeah, bye.
Bye now. And thus we find ourselves at the end of our Halloween edition of Thorn in the Side Thursday. It came as a complete surprise to me today when I was just sort of offhandedly shortening Thorn in the Side Thursday to its initials. What that spells. Dear God, I had no idea. Wasn't even thinking about it. But Thorn in the Side Thursday, the Halloween edition, is now complete. And thanks to everybody who has helped out this evening. It was help badly needed. Thank you to Bill. Thank you to Danny. Thank you to Gene. Thank you to Cameron. And thank you to Ken. Thank you all very much. You've made it much better than it was starting out. And we will begin tomorrow at 495. Well, no, we won't, because tomorrow's a fresh month, isn't it? We start tomorrow at zero with a backlog of $495. But cross your fingers, we'll keep all this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Gene just came up with a new neologism for Ted Cruz. The Cubanadian. That's pretty good. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. And thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. That is where you go if you want to help us end the ongoing nightmare, the human rights, human health crisis that is mountaintop removal in central Appalachia. Acheact, acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.